Guardian Unlimited.
Welcome to Film Weekly, and welcome to the Cannes Film Festival. Yes, this week we're on the French Mediterranean coast, lapped by the azure waters of the sea, as the good, the great, and the average gather for 2 weeks of screenings by day, premieres and parties by night. The Cannes Film Festival is arguably the most prestigious festival in the world. It may all have begun with petty revenge by an Italian dictator, one Mussolini, against one of France's greatest filmmakers, Jean Renoir, way back in 1938. But today, it's the spiritual home of cinema as both art and commerce. So will the 61st Film Festival at Cannes live up to ours, and I suppose its own, expectations? Well, joining me a little later to try and answer that question will be Film Weekly regular Zan Brooks, editor of Guardian Film Online, and Peter Carlton, senior commissioning executive for Film 4. He'll be telling me what visual artists Sam Taylor-Wood and Steve McQueen are doing at this year's film festival. No doubt Zan will be commenting on the distinctly Latin flavour of this year's festival, and I'll be talking to one of Brazil's leading actresses.
I think it's the movie is pretty personal in a way. I think it's the kind of movie that people are going to watch and feel different feelings from the person that's sitting next to you.
Yes, Alice Braga will be telling me about her role in this year's opening gala film, Fernando Morales' Blindness. But first, although almost everyone in the film business is here in Cannes, one person who isn't at the festival, but of whom many great things are of course being said, is writer-director Paul Haggis. Haggis is presently working hard on the script of the next Bond film, but since 2000 he's made a distinct mark on American cinema, indeed made Oscar history by winning the Best Writer Award back-to-back for the film Crash and for Million Dollar Baby. Clint Eastwood, of course, for whom he wrote that, is here in the competition with The Changeling. But Haggis's critically acclaimed film In the Valley of Elah, starring Charlize Theron and Tommy Lee Jones, ventured into difficult political territory, looking at the effect of the Iraq War on a young generation of soldiers and their families. I spoke to Paul Haggis earlier in the week, and I asked him bluntly why this and a number of other critically acclaimed films dealing with the Iraq War had done such terrible box office in the States.
It's always easier to look at someone else's problems than look at your own. Look at the French with Battle of Algiers, and how long was that banned there?
Mm-hmm.
It's still a sensitive subject to them, and this is years and years after the conflict. Sorrow and the pity over there. After World War II, it was banned for another 6 or 7 years or something like that, maybe 10 years. So it's always difficult looking at your own sins.
In a way, all of the crop of war movies were not particularly successful at the box office. I'm thinking of you, I'm thinking of Lions for Lambs, I'm thinking of Brian De Palma, whose Redacted was at the same Venice Film Festival that yours was.
Mm-hmm.
None of them seem to kind of chime with an audience at all. And it can't be because they're all bad movies. In fact, I think, certainly yours is a terrific film.
Well, thank you. I think one thing that happened is they were all sort of lumped in together, as we're doing now, as the war movies. And people said, I know what they have to say. I don't have to bother to see them. I already know I'm against the war or for the war or whatever, so why do I need to see? And when it truly is this, which was doing some of these films quite a disservice, because they were quite terrific dramas on their own, having nothing to do with even if you'd remove the current conflict, they were terrific dramas.
You could say that yours was the search of a man, Tommy Lee Jones, for his son, for his identity, for his patriotism, for loyalty in some way. And I think that Tommy Lee Jones, who got the Oscar nomination, which is the main nomination for your film, thoroughly carried that movie in that careworn face. Extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, no, amazing. He could do so much with so little. And as can Charlize, and Charlize was wonderful in this, in a thankless role, where no makeup, it was her idea, no makeup and clothes from the Target and JCPenney stores, and a very unglamorous role in many ways, and she was just sensational, as was Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, and she got a black eye for her trouble,
yes,
Charlize.
Exactly.
It was a great cast, Paul, and it was following on from the work that you did for Crash, and congratulations on that Oscar, by the way, because I haven't spoken to you since. You've managed to assemble quite a cast for a director. I always thought you were a writer rather than a director, but you managed to assemble all these people to come to act for you.
Yeah, it was my second film as a director, and I guess it was lovely. I met some really terrific actors over the last few years, and people I really admired, and was fortunate enough to get a chance to work with them again.
And are you looking to go directing again? Because In the Valley of Ella has such a distinctive kind of anger to it and a passion, and it follows on from Crash, considering you clearly have themes that you want to express as a director. Are you planning to jump back into that?
I am, and I'm thinking of doing something very different. Very different. I'm thinking of doing a book I read to my son, called The Ranger's Apprentice. It's a fantasy. A medieval fantasy, but it talks set against this world with larger than life characters. It talked about the sort of the horrors of growing up and being 13, and it really deeply touched me. So, in the middle of this thing with monsters and knights, etc., is a lovely story. So that's what I'm thinking of doing next.
That's an interesting thing to follow on from In the Valley of Ella, because there's of course a couple of tender scenes where Tommy Lee Jones reads to Charlize Theron's son in there. Yeah. Was that some kind of inspiration for this?
I never know what inspires me until a few years later. But certainly now that you mention it, yes, fathers, sons, daughters, sons, daughters and fathers, and it always, those issues are always with me, and things I like to explore.
Now, your film, not to give anything away, well, actually, to give the ending away, and to give a very, what I think the most powerful image, one of the most powerful images in recent American cinema history, and one of the bravest, is the way you finished that film In the Valley of Ella with that upside down, tattered and torn American flag. Did you get any flack for that, Paul?
Not at all. Americans think very little of their flag, as you know. They can do anything you want to it. No, I got a lot of heck for that. I'm still in the doghouse over here.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I think you must have been thinking, God, I thank God I'm talking to England, because they're probably kind of quite like you.
Yeah, I know, and it's amazing because it's not really a matter of liberal or conservative. No one here liked to see that, but it's true. I mean, we're at a time of distress.
What do they do to you? Do they throw Twinkies at you?
No, they just attack you on the internet, luckily, but those punches don't really hurt, do they?
But I know what you've done. You've escaped into a kind of British heroism by writing for the new Bond, Quantum of Solace. How's that
going? That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing Casino Royale, and I liked my contribution to this one as well. It's a team effort, and we were all off doing the best we can, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with it.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, I mean, is there, how does, I know you're not supposed to tell me anything really, but does Daniel develop as a character? Are we going to see a different side to him?
Yeah, hopefully you'll go on the same journey that was started with Casino Royale and be swept along.
Right, you're not going to touch the Union Jack and leave that upside down tattered.
That you've heard that scene. Yes, it's upside down, but luckily upside down the Union Jack looks exactly like right side up, so you're fine.
Exactly. See, I knew you tried it, Haggis.
Yes.
A very jovial Paul Haggis there, and the excellent, in my opinion, In the Valley of Ella is out this week on DVD. Well, Paul, as I said, may not be here in sunny Cannes, but the director of two of his best screenplays, Million Dollar Baby and Flags of Our Fathers, is, yes, Clint Eastwood's latest film, The Changeling, premieres here at Cannes alongside a host of other North American big hitters. And in order to get a handle on the range of films, both large and small, long and short, I meet up with Zan Brooks, Film Weekly regular and editor of Guardian Film Online. Welcome, Zan, to my resplendent palace here on the beach.
You've really laid it on thick, haven't you? This is really a Cannes as people want it to be, and it very rarely is, because normally you're kind of stuck in little screening rooms. But we are actually now literally on the beach, looking out at the million-dollar yachts that are out there.
It's not bad, is it? You can picture Brigitte Bardot herself coming up in a itsy-bitsy polka dot.
Yeah, slagging off Muslims and causing no end of trouble.
Yeah, well, let's hope she doesn't interrupt us. But welcome. We are at the UK Film Centre, used to be known as the British Pavilion. So, this is where the hub of the British film industry is, and they're looking at us a bit strangely as we start to review the week. But this is the first day of the festival. I'm quite excited by it. I always am on the first day, especially because we get to see the opening film. And I think everyone's sort of chomping at the bit. It was Fernando Morales' Blindness, of course, Zan. I went to see it. You went to see it. Let's find out what we thought.
Well, I thought that it was quite spectacularly good, really. I think we've had a couple of damp squib opening night galas here in the last couple of years. We had Da Vinci Code, and then last year we had My Blueberry Nights, the Wong Kar-wai film that really wasn't all that. This is really fantastic. This is a a classy apocalyptic thriller, I guess. It's a sort of classy version of The Day of the Triffids or even I Am Legend, about a mysterious epidemic of blindness that results in an unnamed city basically being evacuated and holed up in a derelict hospital and basically kind of left to rot there, and social order kind of breaks down. The one sighted person in this community is Julianne Moore, who's kind of disguising the fact that she can actually see, and so has a kind of the whip hand over other people, and it's how she uses this power that she has that is the sort of the crux of the story.
I thought it was also a very fascinating film, a fascinating experience it was for me, this film. It was a whole kind of almost sensual and sensory experience. I know it's about blindness, but for me it was very much about colour. You'd have thought perhaps this film would have been palette-less, but because it's Fernando Morales who brought such colour to City of God and The Constant Gardener, I think all of that's there.
It's a visually brilliant film, and he does a lot of kind of fascinating cinematographic experiments with this. There's a lot of kind of overexposing going on, where the kind of everything sort of bleeds out and you get this kind of whiteness on the screen. It's a sort of tour de force, really, in terms of sort of visual style.
Well, I'm glad you liked it, because I did sense a little bit of a kind of hushed in the room. People weren't quite sure. In fact, one American critic came out and said to me, "What a piece of crap."
Why?
I have no idea, because it left me slightly muted, because at the end, you know, there's a journey slightly into the light, into hope, if you like. But I was completely kind of, I felt like I'd been kind of bowled over by a surf wave, you know. I'd come out the other side. I was slightly confused by what I'd seen, but I really thought that what I'd seen was actually visually one of the most arresting openers we've certainly had at this Cannes Film
Festival. It's a great film, I think. I mean, it can be read one of two ways. It can be read as a straight apocalyptic drama, and it works on that level, but it's also a kind of allegory of human interaction, human relationships and society in general. And it kind of shows how a catastrophe like this can bring out the absolute worst in people, which it does, but it can also bring out the best in people. There's a great role for Gael Garcia Bernal as the sort of the gun-toting blind demagogue of Ward 3 in this hospital, who kind of is a real Lord of the Flies thing. He sort of takes over and demands first trinkets in exchange for food and then sexual favours in exchange for food.
And that was a really
chilling,
horrific
absolutely
moment. It reminded
chilling.
Me, when the women go towards Gael, who's demanding sexual favours, it reminded me of Schindler's List, the women going into the showers all emaciated and thin. It reminded me of Apocalypse Now, as you mentioned, kind of Kurtz figure with this spell over people.
And in the press conference afterwards, the director Fernando Morales was drawing kind of slight parallels between recent events like Hurricane Katrina and the sort of the bureaucratic government indifference to these kind of catastrophes, and he was saying it's not a political film, but it is a kind of political film in the widest and possibly the best sense of the word.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed the opening film here at Cannes. And I certainly did as well. I don't think it'll win in competition. It's slightly, I think, too sort of famous to win.
Too famous. And there's also seems to be a problem with the opening night films. When they're in competition, they rarely go on to win. It's almost as if being chosen for the opening night slot is a reward in itself. And that's where the kind of glory begins and ends. And yeah, you might be right. It might be just a bit too big and high profile to win the thing.
It does, we mentioned there, the rest of Latin American cinema. It seems to be a distinctly Latin America-flavoured festival this year.
It really does. I mean, you've got Morales, who hasn't made ostensibly a Latin American film, but made his name with City of God. You've got another Brazilian director, Walter Salles, who's here with La Lina de Paz. You've got two Argentinian directors in competition for the Palme d'Or. You've got Lucretia Martel, who great things are expected of with this film, and Pablo Trapero. So, if not dominating the competition, they're certainly more well represented than any other kind of continent.
Zan, thank you very much indeed. Of course, Zan will be blogging throughout the festival at www.guardian.co.uk/film, and he'll be joining us next week, of course, to see if the festival lives up to its promise. Zan, thank you. You're listening to Film Weekly's first Cannes Film Festival special with me, Jason Solomons, coming to you from the UK Film Centre, where the blue Mediterranean is lapping against the golden sand. Well, as you heard with me and Zan earlier, this year's festival is of particular interest to the UK, as two of Britain's most celebrated and acclaimed visual artists debut their first major films in cinema. Steve McQueen's film Hunger premieres in the Uncertain Regard section, and Sam Taylor Wood's short film Love You More also premieres in the short film section. So can the cream of conceptual art take Cannes and film by storm? I went to speak to Peter Carlton, Senior Commissioning Executive for Film 4, who, of course, is behind both of these films. I'm in the resplendent but calm surrounds of the Film 4 Villa here. What a lovely place it is. You could be in Chelsea Flower Show. We've got bamboos, we've got lights on the trees, we've got cane furniture, a fountain trickling softly in the background, and Film 4's Senior Commissioning Editor, Peter Carlton.
Also trickling softly in the background.
Welcome to Film Weekly. Thanks very much for joining us yet again.
A pleasure.
It's that time of year again. Is it important for Film 4?
It is that time of year again, and it is important, which is why we're here in our splendour. It's two things, really. It's, on the one hand, you know, it's in spite of all the glamour and all of the people on their loungers on the Croisette and all of that, those kind of things, and all of their... Alexander McQueen dresses. It is actually a very tawdry trade show, but a very necessary tawdry trade show where people come to shamelessly peddle their wares. And so we're peddling with the best of them. And it really is your chance to get those films that we've toiled over in the dark cutting rooms of London and England out into the international market.
Well, some of them this year seem to be completely new talents. I mean, I looked at the list of the Brits, you thought, well, there's no traditional kind of British entrance this year. And then you look on further inspection, it seems Film 4 are behind kind of, at least certainly three of the most interesting contributions to the Cannes lineup. Yeah. But they're not traditional filmmakers, Peter. We've got Sam Taylor Wood's short Love You More.
That's right.
We've got Steve McQueen, not Alexander McQueen. Steve McQueen, conceptual artist, video Turner Prize winner. Yeah. He's got his first feature opening up at the Arsène de Regard section. And then Dwayne Hopkins is a British filmmaker new to me with his first feature, Better Things, a film I've seen, a little bit Avant la Lettre. It's a very artful piece, a sort of thoughtful, almost European.
Very European, yes. I think people will say that's a bit... My mother would say to me, that's a bit European. She would, with a slightly disapproving frown, actually.
Well, I mean, I liked it. I mean, it's perfect Cannes fair, I would say.
Perfect Cannes fair, indeed.
Why are Film 4 bringing on artists?
Well, I think there are several reasons for that. One of them is being within Channel 4 opens up to that. I mean, one of the great things about being the film arm of a broadcaster is you get to see lots of other stuff going on. And one of the things that Channel 4 does is commissions adventurous arts programming. So my colleague Jan Younghusband, who's commissioning editor in arts, you know, she spends her time hobnobbing with all these strange people in kind of weird galleries in Whitechapel and places like
that.
Warm
white wine and like.
All of that. Lots of warm white wine and lots of sort of, you know, people painting their bodies and rolling around on the floor and that kind of thing. It shows you how much I know about modern art. But, and then Jan lets these people loose and they sort of go, well, that's making a film. And she says, well, I'll go and talk to my nice friend Peter in Film 4 as if he thinks it's a good idea as well. I mean, seriously, there is that great crossover of talent that we actually, you know, are looking perhaps in places that other people aren't looking.
Was there a day where you sort of said, well, do you know what, I'm a bit bored. I mean, it's all very well, all this kind of, you know, British filmmaker stuff. I just want to broaden the horizons because they've taken to film very well.
It was a meeting of minds. A meeting of minds and aspirations. There were filmmakers such as Steve, such indeed as Sam, who have a genuine, now filmmakers, artists who have a genuine love of film. You know, Sam has always wanted to work narratively and really has, you know, she's an artist, so she'd worked in a gallery context, always wanted to know. Steve, absolutely, and one of the things he's adamant about at this film is, this is a film, I don't want it to be sort of excused as an art piece. This has got to stand up. You know, he was sort of saying, can we make sure none of those arts journalists and people are there? We just want to make sure it's proper, you know, it's proper film people.
He wants it to go, absolutely.
There was that aspiration. There was, as I say, within the channel and coming from Jan, a real chance to sort of say, look, let's use the fact that we're a channel and we can allow people to cross over, to let them try new things. And that's a fantastic ambition. And then certainly from my point of view and Film 4's point of view, there was a feeling that, you know, maybe if you look back 5-10 years, British film was very strong in certain areas, but perhaps had got stuck in certain ruts, you know, the sort of the funny comedy, a certain type of period drama, a certain type of sort of, you know, Mockney gangster movie. And where are the people who are looking at the world in new and exciting ways and bringing cinema alive? Because cinema is about making you look at things in a way you've never seen before. It's about making you go, taking your breath away with an image. And of course, that's what visual artists do all the time. So we said, well, let's talk to those people. It's funny being down here with Steve's film because, of course, 3 years ago we were here with Miranda July with her film Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Yes,
and
she's a conceptual artist.
Artist indeed. And, you know, that won the Camera d'Or then, which is the award here for the best first-time feature from a first-time director. So it's Cannes feels like a good place to do that, perhaps. Yeah, well, people are tapped into those
sensibilities. It is a fusion of art and commerce like nowhere else here. Okay. But also the French are quite good with their artists. They know what to do with artists. They don't, and their cinema kind of straddles a slightly, I suppose, let's say, artistic mode than the recent British
film. I think they think unashamedly of cinema as art. And if you talk about cinema as art, you don't necessarily have to immediately become slightly pompous and speak in a slower voice. You know, it doesn't. It's not inimical to things that that actually people might want to go and see.
Film 4's Peter Carlton there. And if you want to find out a bit more about this new wave of British filmmakers, do check out Andrew Pulver's excellent article on guardian.co.uk film. And there you can catch up with my reviews and musings on some of the films in this year's festival. More importantly, you can voice your own opinions on all the films we feature. At the moment, you can battle it out with people like Scotty McDotty and Minky, amongst others, as they debate which is the most violent British film of all time on our blog. And violence is, of course, without doubt, at the heart of Fernando Moreira's new film, Blindness. Adapted from the Portuguese novel by José Saramago, the film plots the breakdown of a society when a mysterious and seemingly incurable blindness spreads randomly amongst the population of an unnamed city.
Your eyes are perfect.
You see, I told you.
Except I cannot see anything.
Yes, and if this is true, then we're going to have to run some more tests. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do that today.
What do you mean, if it's true? You think I'm lying?
No, not at all. But I have to be honest with you, I've never experienced anything like this before.
So, is that a prescription?
No, I'm actually writing directions for the hospital.
I know how to get to the hospital. I don't need directions.
They're not for you, they're for the staff, so they know what to do with your husband when he arrives.
Okay. So that's it?
That's it for now.
Doctor? I don't think you understand what this is like. I don't think I can deal with this much longer by myself.
Miss, you're not by yourself. I'm here. You have my phone number. You can call me anytime you like. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. We're going to find out what it is.
Mark Ruffalo, who you heard there, plays the central character of the Doctor, who's oblivious to the horrors that await him. From City of God to The Constant Gardener, director Fernando Morales has established a distinct visual style and a thematic propensity towards narratives dealing with the individual and societal violence. Blindness is clearly a continuation of this and an exploration of what happens to mankind when, both literally and metaphorically, the blind start leading the blind. Brazilian actress Alice Braga shot to fame in Morales' film City of God, which premiered here at Cannes. She now returns to work with the director in Blindness, and I met up with Alice just before the film's official premiere to ask her what it meant to her to be in Cannes.
Being here with Fernando is really special because Fernando is kind of a godfather for me because he was the one that, you know, he was the first director that I've worked with. It was my first feature film. And
it's amazing. I mean, because this is, I think, of all the Cannes, this is one of the most Latin American influenced Cannes. Fernando's opening, Walter Salles himself has a film in it. You're here. There's a lot of other Brazilian films that are on around and Latin American films. It's a very big time for Latin American cinema, clearly, and you're kind of benefiting from it.
Yeah, definitely. I actually feel honored to be part of it because I think we have great filmmakers coming. I think we have great actors coming, and I think it's important to open that door, and having like one of the best Brazilian actor directing a movie and being in Soto Regar competition is for me was amazing, and having Fernando and Walter, as you said.
Does it feel like you're on a new wave? What do you call them? Onda Nova?
Onda Nova. It feels kind of, I'm not sure if it's a new wave, but it feels a lot like more doors are being open, and I think people are willing to see what we get to show. It's a great time. I think we should go for it. Yeah. Watch Latin movies.
So let's talk a little bit about filming Blindness, because it was in Sao Paulo, because I was there recently and I saw it. I was like, oh, that's that's your town.
It's my hood.
Yeah?
It's my hood.
do you feel proud of it when you see it on the big screen?
I feel really proud of it. I love Sao Paulo. I'm from there. I was born and raised there. I still live there. I think it's a phenomenal city. It's really cinematographic city, I think, in my opinion. It was just great to have Fernando kind of building one city in three different places. In Uruguay, we shot just for a week, and then Sao Paulo, and then Toronto. I think there's a mix of cities that Tula Peak, which is the production designer, created with Fernando. I think it was just phenomenal to get the chance to to create a city that is common to everyone. I think the movie is not in Spanish or in Portuguese, because English is a language that everyone speaks. And I think Fernando wanted to just talk about human being and not just about one specific society. He wanted to talk about everyone and not just one specific
and
person.
And I think having you in there, it makes it feel, you know, because you have a slight accent, although...
Yeah, I have an accent. And then there's two Japanese actors, Yusuke Isaya and Yoshino Kimura, amazing Japanese actors. And then Gael Garcia Bernal, and then Julian Moore, and Mark Ruffalo, and Danny Glover. There's so many people, like Don McKellar from Canada, you know, all of that. I can't be like going because there's a huge cast.
But
what
was that like as a cast? I mean, you were all kind of...
It was crazy.
In some kind of... I don't know where that was. It was some kind of...
It was deactivated prison an hour from Toronto in Guelph, which is a small city, and we were shooting everyone there all the day. Like there was like 100 or 200 extras, lots of people, but it was amazing because everyone was so willing to tell the story. And apart from that, the story was so heavy that I think we made light while we were shooting, because you need to make it light if you're telling something so hard. I think we tried to balance that.
So you had fun?
We had a lot of fun, actually. I must say that I can remember, like, when I remember something, I'm like, oh my God, this was hilarious. So it was good. And Fernando is a phenomenal director. He's just the kind of guy that he's there, he's humble, he's generous, he's kind, he's sweet and calm. So I think you cannot wish for better director than, you know, that kind of thing.
And do you see, has he changed as a director since City of God? Has he improved as a director?
Definitely, I think he got more confidence, definitely. He's more mature in that sense, but as a person, as a director, I think he's the same.
One thing that certainly hasn't left him is a kind of sense of style and colour and music, which was very important to City of God. Of course,
yeah.
It kind of put Rio on the map, it kind of made Samba revival, it kind of made the whole... You know, everyone goes on holiday to Brazil now because of you and your bikini in the front of the soundtrack of City of God.
My 10 collar.
Yes. But that very much is here in a slightly different format with Blindness. It's a different, but it's the colours are very important to Blindness, the whites, the blacks, the sound, the music, the kind of the dark brown of the prison. That is his cinematographer, César Chalon.
Yeah.
He was the same guy you worked with on City of God and here.
Yeah, and Colson Gardner, they are like partners. They've been working together for the past couple of years, and I think it's amazing they can communicate in the way that they want to show that story, to portray that story. I think it's pretty powerful. I think for each movie, they chose a way of showing, not just, you know, not just using colors or, you know, just playing with the images, but really bring a message with it.
You know, it's more than a film. It's a kind of, you know,
experience.
Yeah.
That's good. Good to know.
But you would spend a lot of it in dark glasses.
Yeah. What was not a lot of it, like some part of it.
Yeah.
It was good. It was fun because sometimes I could close my eyes.
Go to sleep.
Go to sleep. No, I'm kidding. But like, close my eyes as if I was blind. Mm. No, but I haven't done that because after rehearsing and doing so many exercises or researches for that, I just, like, you just get
well, what
used
do you,
to it.
What do you do? Because it does seem one of the hard things to do is be drunk and be blind is the other one.
Be blind was really hard. It was a great challenge, actually. It was something that people tend to say after, like, I did some movies, they say that I act a lot with my eyes. My emotion comes through my eyes. And when Fernando invited me to do the movie, I'm like, how am I going to do that? I'm blind. I cannot do that. So it was a great challenge to face. And I think for all actors, it was just a joy. But we did a lot of research and rehearsed a lot. The experience, like wearing blindfolds and all of those things. I found actually a documentary named Black Sun about Gary Turn. And from Gary Turn is the director.
Yeah.
And it talks about this man that goes blind. So I think it's the kind of thing that is just... It just pulls you to feel the feeling, to understand that.
Well, Alice, it must be very exciting to be in Cannes. You're about to go and get dressed into your, your designer dress for tonight.
Yeah.
Big party.
Yeah.
Roberto Ferretti.
What?
What are you wearing tonight?
I'm wearing Prada.
Prada.
Yeah, Miss Miuccia Prada.
Yeah, going up the red steps.
Yeah.
Really, it must be very exciting for you.
I am having butterflies, and I think I'm going to have a heart attack, like palpitations before going in. I hope I'll be fine.
Wear those dark glasses, you'll be fine.
I could do that, right?
You could say, well, I'm just...
I could do like a Wong Kar Wai style.
Yeah.
Just dark glasses.
Alice Braga there, starring in Fernando Moreira's film Blindness, which opened this year's Cannes Film Festival. Well, that's all I've got for you now. That's the first edition. We will be back a week from now with a roundup of the best films at the festival. I'll, of course, be covering the festival online at guardian.co.uk/film and in this week's Observer, where Trailer Trash and my reviews will be found. I'll be back with more interviews with celebrities and reviews of films. Thanks to all my guests this week, to Zan, to Peter Carlton, and, of course, to the lovely Alice Braga. From me, Jason Solomons, and my producer, Jason Phipps. Au revoir.
Guardian Unlimited.